Hello, fellow Rebel Capitals. Hope you're well. I'm here with my good buddy, Kenny McElroy, and we are going to get into some commercial real estate. Now, Kenny is an expert. In fact, Kenny, why don't you give him a short kind of Reader's Digest version of your backstory to get everyone up to speed so they understand how you've got your finger on the pulse of what's happening with this commercial real estate crisis.
Yeah, of course. Thanks, George. Yeah. So I started in multifamily in college, started buying them in my 20s. And now since we bought and sold $3 billion, we currently own $2 billion of mostly multifamily. But through all that history, George, I've done self-storage, land development, office, you know, all kinds of stuff, retail. And I think, so now we're just closely monitoring, obviously, all these loan problems and the work from home issues, which again, is just going to repurpose existing real estate as it has and as it always will.
How many tenants do you have?
We have about 10,000 tenants right now. And, you know, and that's a whole nother topic.
What are you seeing there as far as your tenants' ability to pay rent and your ability to increase prices?
It breaks my heart. The rentals are supposed to be a spot for people to go to build credit to buy a home. That's right. The progression. That's the way the system's supposed to be. What's happening now is people are ramping up their credit cards. There's all kinds of companies preying on them. So even Apple has Apple Pay, but now they have Apple Pay, later. Like, I don't know if you know that.
Like, I didn't know that. So it's like a layaway program.
Huh. Yeah. So that's what's happening. There's companies that are actually paying me rent and then going and letting the resident, finance it. So
you're kidding me.
Yeah. Yeah, we just did.
Wow, I didn't know. So let's just stop right there for a moment. So if I can't pay rent, I'm basically going to a place that does payday loans.
Yep.
And saying, hey, can you pay Kenny for me? I can't afford that $1,500 rent payment. And they're saying, fine, but you're going to have to pay us back next month and we're going to charge you 25% interest. And people are doing it.
Yeah. And I don't know if those are all the terms, but yes, that's exactly there. The never before have we had a company come in between the tenant and us, you know, typically the tenant, the last thing we want to do, George, is evict people.
Right.
I mean, that is not fun. It's not the whole, it's not why we're in the business.
And it's a huge cost to get in another tenant. Yep. So it's way cheaper. It's like, is it more costly for you to get a new customer or retain a current customer? Yes.
A lot more. Back to that. Yeah, a lot more. But also, you know, these people, when they rent to us, or we rent to them, I should say, we know that they have a application. We know where they work. We know their credit. So we're not renting to people that can't afford it. We're renting the people that want to be there and they want to pay and they understand what the rent is all before they move in. So all we're trying to do is just be like a placeholder for their next step. And so we're starting to see the underpinning erode the consumer, at least in our company and my friends, the consumer is getting pulled down. They're getting pulled down from high interest rate credit cards. They're getting pulled down from autos, the car loans. They're getting pulled down from inflation and the food costs and the gas and the energy and all that stuff. It's crazy what's happening.
They're maxing out their credit card because of everything that you just said. But then when they can't get another credit card, then they go to this other entity, which is effectively the exact same thing.
Yeah.
Say, hey, can I just take out this rent credit card or Kenny McElroy credit card so I can pay MC Properties rent and then I'll pay you the 22%. And it's got to be a huge interest rate, Kenny, because that's obviously an unsecured loan.
It is.
Like a credit card or anything else. So my point is they've maxed out their credit cards and now they're having to finance rent, which is basically just adding more to that high interest debt burden they already have.
Yeah. And really what they're doing is a lot of times, obviously when rent's due, let's say on the first of the month, let's say it's $1,500. what they're allowing them to do is pay weekly. So that's kind of the first step. So in other words, they can finance, you know, $450, I guess, per week. And so a lot of people, as you know, are working that way. Their money comes in different tranches. And so it allows them to pay $450 a week instead of $1,500. Actually, it's a little less than that, $450 a week. But the $1,500 a month, they can actually pay by week. And so I don't really want it. I'm not in that game. So there's a company that they go to. We get the full $1,500 and then they figure out the balance. Yeah.
Wow. All right. So that is a topic for a completely separate video. Let's get back to the commercial real estate stuff. Although I guess that would apply to the banks as well, because those same people that are having to take out a loan to pay their rent are people that probably owe the bank, possibly a regional bank, money as well, which would be an asset on the regional bank's balance sheet, just like a loan to an investor to buy one of these properties, it's plummeting in value.
Yeah, the interesting thing is like even Apple Pay later, like that doesn't show up on credit reports yet. Mm. So if you look, there's a whole bunch of chatter about whether it should be on the bureau or not, because essentially I'm getting paid. They've outsourced the obligation to a third party, and that third party isn't actually reporting that. So it's actually worse than most people think.
That's a great point. Yeah. I mean, that you would think that would go, or that should go on their credit report, because basically what they're doing is they're saying I would have defaulted if not for getting this payday loan.
Yep. Like on a regular, and
the probability that they default on that payday loan is even greater.
Yes, right. Because to your point, typically those, they're not doing it, for anything other than profit. So they're financing that as well.
Yeah. Okay. So going back to commercial real estate, I want to pull up a property, and we're not going to say where this property is, but this is something that came across your desk the other day. And I think the asking price now is what was it roughly?
It was about $7.5 million. And it's important to understand that I get deals like this every day. I get 10 to 20 deals a day, perhaps even more. And, this is not unusual for me to see something like this. It's not at all surprising. What's happening is obviously when everyone got sent home and the pandemic and all of that, work from home changed and people decided, a lot of people, I don't want to go back to the office. And a lot of employers said, well, we don't really need offices. And so we don't really want employees to go back to the offices. So whatever side of the fence you're on, it's irrelevant. The point is the office building market changed a lot. And there are lots and lots and lots of vacancies as a result of that.
Yeah. And I think obviously that's going to get worse if we go into a recession. But what people need to realize, the building that's priced at, let's just say $7 million right now, that Kenny took a pass on, we're going to show you this building. Just what, Kenny, 5 years ago, it was sold for $30 million.
Yeah, in the 30s. So I'll just give you history. So the building's 117,000 square feet, I think. And so that's a large office building. So everybody's come into this building. This could be office. It could be medical. It could be whatever. Like people have been in these buildings all the time. You pull up to them, you walk in, there's a bank of elevators to your right and your left. You go up, you find whatever, and you leave. Well, this building is currently 100% vacant. So,
jeez.
So the at some point, obviously it was built, and then at some point it's been sold. And so let's just say that there's $20 million of debt on it. It's the same model. The building was sold for in the 30s. There's some bank put 20 on it and the rest is equity. That's a very typical real estate transaction. You got the equity and you've got the debt. The problem is as more and more people moved out, it became vacant. And four floors, first floor moves out, let's say now you got 75% of the income. second floor moves out. Now you got 50% of the income, you know, and on and on and on until zero. So what does zero pay? Nothing, right? It pays no utilities. It pays no property taxes, pays no insurance. It pays nothing. It can't pay the mortgage. And certainly it can't pay back investors. So now you have this physical asset sitting in the middle of an area. And these are happening everywhere. This is not a one-off situation. This is not unique. And so now you're looking at this piece of land. And the owner, because there's still an owner, remember, now it could be the bank.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, but now it's the bank that lent the $20 million that's going to get maximum $7 million back, and they're going to take a $13 million haircut.
If they even get seven.
And that's best case scenario.
Yep. And I don't think they will, because don't forget, like a guy like me, the way it's being marketed, and that's why I got it, is this is a multifamily redevelopment. So let's go in and, you know, renovate this thing and turn it into apartments, which is kind of the buzz going on right now. I just looked at this thing and laughed. I don't know about you, George, but I don't really want to live in, let's say, less than 1,000 feet in the United States. Okay. So if that's just the case, the most you're going to get is about 100 units in this thing. And so I wouldn't even lift my finger for a 100-unit apartment building, you know, like, it just doesn't make any sense financially to go all through all this work and only get 100 units out of it. Because on that same site, I could build 200, you know? So I could build, if I was to rip it down, I could build more than double that.
Yeah. So I think what people need to understand is it gets to a point where you quite literally would not accept the property for free, because the cost in renovating it and turning it into these apartment complexes would be the same cost that you would have to buy a piece of land and build it from scratch. In fact, you'd probably be able to do it cheaper at 100 doors. You could probably do 200 doors at the exact same price as it would for you to do this whole entire renovation and turn it from office into multifamily. So guys like you are looking at this saying, I wouldn't even take it if you gave it to me.
Correct.
Because then I'd have the liability of the property taxes, and it would be more expensive than to just go out there and buy a property and do it from scratch.
Yeah. And let me give you another couple set of factors that are really driving home. It's less than 7 acres. And so they're asking, let's say $7 million, $7.5 million. Okay. That's $1 million an acre. like you would never pay anything close to that.
Give me an example, Kenny. What are you paying for an acre right now?
Oh gosh, maybe $300,000 or $400,000.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, and of course it depends on the area, and there's a whole bunch of factors on. Obviously, you're going to pay more for land downtown rural than you are downtown urban instead of rural, let's say. But $1 million an acre is a lot for multifamily land. So you have to calculate that back into whatever the construction costs are going to be. The other piece, George, is you have to demo it.
There you go. Yeah.
So
before you go there, Kenny, let me show a picture of this building so people know what we're talking about. This is not a dilapidated building. This is not a building that looks like it was built in the 1940s or something like that. And this is a great looking building. Here we go. Josh will do the screen share. So look, modern. I mean, you've got all the infrastructure, the AC, it looks like a brand new roof. I mean, this is a fantastic looking setup. And then while Kenny, you can go ahead and explain this. And what I want the viewer to try to think through is how much it would cost to demo this thing and clear that out and the permits and everything.
I just want to point out to everybody, you know, like this is not going to be a unique scenario, one-off. These buildings are everywhere. And as more and more and more people decide not to return to the office and more employers decide that they don't need that much space, you're going to see more and more and more of this. So the problem is this use of this building is only really office. And, you know, if you convert it, you're not going to convert it to apartments. Let's just don't forget that people don't want to just move into an office building just because you bought it and decided it needs to be an apartment building. Like, I mean, look, it doesn't have a pool. It doesn't have a, you know, like all these things that it needs, right? There's just so, it's not gated.
And you'd only have windows on one side.
Yeah. And by the way, you can't even open them. Who could open an office building window, right? Like, you know, you got a common bathroom near the elevators. There's just so many problems. This is not a conversion. It's a full tear down and a demo. You know, it's millions of dollars to demo. So if you paid $7 million, your basis in the land is going to be at least $10 million. And don't forget, this is all personal cash. You have to then convince somebody, the city, the county, of whatever concept that you want to do, and that's a whole process too. That could take years because a lot of times these neighborhoods don't want multifamily sitting in there and because it's zoned right now.
Or they don't want a construction site for the next 5 years right next to them making noise.
Yeah, and it's zoned also office. So there's that, you know, like, so you can't just decide it's going to be multifamily because it's zoned office. And that's kind of the point of zoning. And so you have to get that changed. So you have to get the zoning changed and you have to paint a picture and a vision for somebody to finance it, a bank and equity and the whole thing. And, you know, we haven't even gotten into the location. You know, the reason I passed, actually, believe it or not, was it's in a pretty bad location. And the irony, George, is that across the freeway is a failing mall. So like within a quarter mile, and this is a mall that was built years ago. And you guys all know JCPenney's, Macy's, Sears, Kmart, just Bed & Bath & Beyond, line them up. They're gone. Right. Yeah. They're gone. So these malls are dying too. So across the freeway, you have this mall that's basically dying and they have like 2,300 units planned there. So now all of a sudden I'm looking at it. I'm like, well, and the, you know, the broker's like, oh, this is a good thing. You know, I'm like, it's not a good thing to have 3,000 more units in a market of a quarter mile.
Multifamily units.
And not to mention the fact that, you know, let's just put it this way. You wouldn't take your girlfriend there for a date. You like, it's not,
you wouldn't take your kids to that area.
No, you know, it's just, it's rough. So you got all of those things that, you can't just take an old sled, beat up sled, rip it down and put something up brand new and beautiful and shiny. You know, people understand neighborhoods. They can see things. And so, you know, the location is very, very important. And this is not a good one.
Hey guys, I want to invite each and every one of you to join me May 31st through June 2nd in Orlando for Rebel Capitalist Live. This is the annual conference I do, and this year it's going to be absolutely incredible. We're going to have some of your favorites there as speakers, guys like Jeff Snyder, Mike Green, the real estate, Kenny McElroy. We're going to have Robert Barnes. They're talking about freedom and liberty. Even Rich Cooper is going to be there discussing red pill issues. This event is all about giving you the intel, the insider information you need to not only survive 2024, but thrive. The whole reason I created this event was to give you the tools you need to build the future you deserve for yourself and your family. This is an event you are not going to want to miss. So to get more information, go to rebelcapitalistlive.com. You can see a full list of speakers we've had in the past. You can see clips from past events. And most importantly, you can get your tickets. As we get closer to the event, the tickets go up in price. So you're going to want to get those ASAP at rebelcapitalistlive.com. And we will see you in Orlando, May 31st through June 2nd.
Kenny, what do you think about the shadow inventory? I've been hearing that a lot. Yeah, and what I mean by that specifically is, let's just assume this building had 50% occupancy.
Yeah.
But so, half of those people, their lease expires in the next year, and let's say 50% aren't going to come back. In fact, they don't even have workers going in right now. They're just paying the lease even though they don't need it. So you may think that building has a 50% occupancy rate, but you fast forward just a few months or a year, and it's really 20 or 30%.
It's a great question. I was actually with a friend of mine last week that his he had a company, one in a big company in Phoenix in LA, and he's paying hundreds of thousands of dollars a month in rent. And all his company's basically done. And, you know, the pandemic kind of put him out of business, but he's still legally obligated to pay on those leases.
Right. He's probably got a personal guarantee on it.
Yes. And so that's the shadow vacancy. So what it is Dave is still paying each and every month the rent on those assets. Cause when you lease a property, you're actually signing a lease personally for your company. When your company goes out of business, you're still obligated to pay that. And there's people fighting that, and I understand all that's going on. But the point is, the landlord would consider that occupied.
Yeah,
that's the point. So in Dave's case, he's paying rent, and the landlord's seeing that on the rent roll, and they're saying it's occupied. Meanwhile, there's no company. And so that's what's called shadow inventory. And essentially that will all work itself out at the end of the lease. And there's millions and millions and millions of square foot that are still working its way through the system. See, these office leases can be 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 years. Mm-hmm. And if I know I went into a high rise recently, and I remember one of the tenants was DoorDash, if you remember, you know, and we got off on the floor, and it was all these desks with computer monitors with this Visqueen over it, this plastic over all the desks. It was 100% nobody in there, and it was almost half of the floor. And so as those companies start to renew their leases, they're obviously not going to renew that. And so that's the shadow vacancy. So you have vacancy, which is truly vacant. And then you have shadow vacancy, which are companies are going to not renew or change the size that they want later.
Yeah. Or they're going to renegotiate. And why on earth? If you, it's not like you're some sort of idiot that can't see what's happening around you. And what I mean by that is, if you're a tenant in one of these buildings, and the building, let's say, has capacity for 100 tenants, and you're down to two, and one of them is you, when you go to renew your lease, even if you want to, you're going to be like, hey, I've got the landlord by the balls. Like, I can basically name my price because he can't get anyone else in here. So if I'm paying whatever, let's just say $5 a square foot, hell no, I'm going to renegotiate for $1 a square foot. And that's even if I stay.
Yeah, I think the greatest example of that right now that's very public on the internet is Elon Musk.
So, oh, there you go. Right.
We know that he reduced Twitter by what, 75% of workforce or something. Let's just use that. Well, that means he also reduced his office space need by the same amount. And so I know there's several stories out there, and I talked to a couple of brokers that are in San Francisco, and he's just like, I'm not paying you, period. Now, the landlord's going to just list it as occupied because, you know, occupied, not paid is different than vacant. But anyway, you know, so there he's like negotiating with Musk over space he doesn't need. And so pennies on the dollar, whatever it is. But that landlord is reliant on that money coming in to be able to pay the bank. And that's exactly what happened in this particular case.
Yeah. In the end of the day, the bag holder is the bank.
Correct.
That's what we got to remember.
Yeah. And the bank, of course, is typically sits on that collateral. So that collateral is supposed to pay back the loan, right? That's how loan to value works. So in this particular case, if they loan, let's say, $20 million against a $30 million value, once they get down to about, let's say, 30% vacant, they're in a little bit of trouble. The banks now, you know, and so that's what happened. The bank steps in and said, what's going on? But when you're at 100% vacant, it's pretty clear There's no money coming in. There's nobody getting paid on anything.
Yeah, but the bank is going to, they're likely going to have to take 100% loss on that. And just think how, think about the ripple effect. Let's just assume the bank can absorb that. Well, how does that impact their future willingness to lend? Not just in that business, but any business for that matter. And that's why, my opinion, you see bank credit, you look at a Fred chart, and it's pretty much flat when historically it's always trending upward along with the economy. So you can sit there and talk about 5% nominal GDP growth all you want, but I don't know how that's sustainable if the banks are pulling back to the degree to which would cause bank lending to decrease, which is likely what we'll see moving forward.
Yeah, well, we're seeing it now. As you know, we do a lot of multifamily deals, and you know, we're seeing 50 to 55% loan to value. So the banks have already pulled back, and they haven't even yet experienced some of these losses that are coming. It's they're anticipating it. So we're starting to see it now. We would have seen 70%, let's say 75% loan to value just a couple of years ago. Now they're in their 50s. And right. And that's basically should tell you that banks are not going to lend as much. What that essentially means is if they're giving you 50% of on the debt side, you have to come up with 50% on the equity side, as opposed to say 75% on the debt side and 25% on the equity side. So they're saying you need more capital up front, which is also a problem because everything's heading the wrong direction. There's not more equity to be able to put down.
Yeah, and this is why we say be careful about what you wish for in terms of low interest rates.
Right.
Because low interest rates don't necessarily mean that money is available. Or, you've got free money out there, or money is loose. No. If you have low interest rates, most of the time, that's because you're living in an environment where money is tight. Money is extremely tight, regardless of the interest rate, to your point, because the banks are saying, okay, fine, we'll lend, let's say the Fed drops rates, fine, we'll lend at 1%, but you're going to have to come up with 80% of the equity. We're only going to give you 20% LTV, and it comes with all these stipulations and yada, yada, yada. So the net result is they're actually creating less money by lending it into existence with low interest rates.
That's right. And you don't just have to look at it in a real estate. We saw this with cars. You know, when interest rates went down, car prices went up. Now car prices are down. Same thing happened with real estate. You know, price of real estate went up, interest rates went up, then price of real estate's coming down. So it's the exact same thing.
Yeah. That lag effect takes time to work through the system. So Kenny, when do you think you'll start to see the opportunity? Because, you know, one thing I'm a firm believer in, whatever would be the hardest thing to pull the trigger on right now is probably the number one thing that should be on your watch list. So we're looking at this disaster, this collapse, this crisis in commercial real estate. But what that would tell me is that should be on my watch list of things that I may want to purchase in the future because there could be an incredible opportunity there. So how do you reconcile these two things at the same time? The price is collapsing and you don't want to catch a falling knife, while at the exact same time, you want to take advantage of an opportunity that no one else is willing to even look at.
Well, there's a bunch of things to consider. You know, I always say, like, well, how do you know you're in a bad relationship? You know, it takes a while. And I was like,
well, sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, that's right. Sometimes it doesn't. But you know, what happens is, like, you think about the process. The building owner is in denial. They're trying to rent it. Slowly, it's a death of a thousand cuts. Now, if they're experienced, they're hedging immediately. And but if they're not, it's just slowly erodes. Depends on the bank. Then eventually, of course, this thing lands in the bank. This one, this particular property happens to be in bankruptcy, just to complicate it a little bit more. You know, you might as well throw that on top of it. So you have all of those things. And what happens, George, is the bank now, because I've been through this with the banks, they actually have a fiduciary obligation to their shareholder.
Right.
So they have to go out and get an appraisal. What's this thing worth today? Vacant. Now, the irony is at this point, think of this. It may not show a loss on the bank's books at this point. That's very interesting. So let's say they have a $20 million loan. It's going to show as an asset of $20 million on their bank, right?
Yeah.
Now, they already know that it's being listed for seven, let's say. Okay, so they've already gone through this process.
Yeah, yeah.
But they haven't actually written it down yet. And so so what has to happen is it, as an appraisal, it goes out to bid like it is now. People are looking at it, bidding on it. And there's a whole process there. And then it'll settle out based on whatever it settles out at. Maybe somebody buys it at seven. I find that hard to believe, but they could. And then they would have to take that $13 million write down. So there's a process that has to happen, and that could take a while. You know, from the time there's distress, it could take years, right?
Yeah. And they could be waiting for the Fed to drop rates because they're under the illusion that somehow that'll make things better without realizing that that's an environment where things are actually worse. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like your bank manager there, who's ever in charge, they could be saying, well, you know, we're booking that on the balance sheet right now at $20 million. If we do sell, we're probably going to have to write that down to five or 10, whatever. But if we don't sell, let's just hang on a little bit because the market's predicting that the Fed is going to drop rates this year. And if the Fed is dropping rates this year, then the cap rates are going to go down and magically we're going to reaccelerate the economy. They're going to have more tenants in this building and therefore we kind of dodge a bullet. So I think you've probably got that dynamic going on as well.
You could. Yeah. Again, it's going to depend on the bank. You know, the bigger banks, believe it or not, are much, much more difficult to navigate. You know, it's like trying to navigate the U.S. government, you know, like anything you do with them is 10 times harder. So, you know, there's multiple departments and multiple decision makers and all that kind of stuff. But I think it's interesting. Back in 08, I'll say it might have been 2010, I had a bank approach me and they were going to give me, listen to this, give me 200 units in Arlington, Texas.
Mm.
So of course you got to go, why would a bank give me this for free?
Because they're nice, Kenny.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm like, we jump in, you know, cause it's my business. So I figure I can't remember, I'm going off of memory, but let's say it's $10 million at something, which is super cheap. Well, then there was $10 million plus maybe another three or four to fix it, right? Because it was vacant, had all these problems, just like this. So now I'm like, okay, $10 million plus three. And so you have to solve to the end. Like, am I taking somebody else's falling knife? You know, like, am I, you know, is it really worth me taking it off of their hands? Because what they're trying to do is, it's like the end of the game at Monopoly, right? Like, here, you take this. I know it's full of debt. You have to figure it out. It's not on my balance sheet anymore. I'm going to move it to yours. And so we passed because we felt like the free property plus the renovations did not support the value of the market.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
What the bank was trying to do was hedge that and not have to report that. And so there's all kinds of games that'll be played at this juncture on these assets. But this particular, I don't even think, you know, think about this. It's not even financeable. Like there's, you know, when somebody gives you an interest rate and a loan on something, it's almost always because there's income coming in. Like they're gonna, so
there's cash flow. Right.
Yeah. So 100% vacant building is not even financeable.
Yeah. That's all right. Well, we're going to have to wait and see how this is playing out. I just absolutely love talking to you, Kenny, because we can get those insights. It's one thing to watch CNBC or Bloomberg or the Wall Street Journal and hear about this stuff, but it's something altogether different talking to an insider who actually is in the trenches living this stuff every single day. And I really want to pay attention to what's going on with basically the consumer loans for people being able to bridge the gap with just making their monthly rent payment. And they're having to pay 25% interest just to do that. That's a whole other can of worms there. But let's talk about Rebel Capitalist Live. You're going to be there. It's going to be May 31st through June 2nd. Super stoked. In fact, we can go over and look at a group of speakers. Now, if you look at the final row of speakers, you would think the only people I've invited are bald, as though that's some sort of prerequisite. In fact, I just noticed that when we added Ivor. I said, wow, it looks like it's a convention for bald guys or something. But no, Kenny McElroy is going to be there, and he does, in fact, have hair.
Oh, look at that.
And Snyder's got a lot of hair now.
What is going on with Snyder?
So, Kenny, what do you think is going to happen between now and May? I mean, do you think we're going to see some progression with the banks, or just maybe on the tenant side?
Well, I think the banking sector is just they're in the first few innings, George. They don't even know yet like what's coming at them. So I think it's a great time to have Rebel Capitalists. I'm going to bring all this stuff. I'm going to bring all kinds of kind of behind the scenes stuff that we talked about today to Rebel Capitalists, so people can kind of see what I'm seeing. You know, what are
do so with your tenants too. If I can just make a personal request, intel you've got with the tenants, just with the banks. Let's talk about that at Rebel Capitalists Live as well.
Yeah, for sure. That's really where it's at. What's going on with the consumer?
Yeah.
You know, what are they feeling? And we did a YouTube on that with the head of our director of our management company, Shannon. And it's got 500,000 views in 2 weeks because they're like, I want to hear this. And that's really, you know, what's going on with retail, you know, because Amazon has gobbled up that, and you know, these small mom and pops are getting pounded. What's going on with malls? What's going on with commercial office? You know, where's multifamily headed? You know, those are big, big things that are, you know, everybody's so focused on, well, house prices in my area are the same. Yeah, right. That's not a barometer. You know, what's really, really
for the overall economy, right?
Yeah, not at all.
Okay, well, guys, get your tickets ASAP. The faster you get them, the cheaper they are. They go up in price as we get closer to the event. And this is an event you are not going to want to miss. That's for sure. Kenny, how can people watch more of your videos? Go to Kenny McElroy on YouTube.
Yeah, you got it. McElroy. And, I just keep pumping this stuff out. I love it.
Yeah. All right. Well, make sure you tell Kiyosaki hi for me.
I will, for sure.
In a while. So enjoy your day, Kenny. Thanks for coming on.
Okay, bud. See ya.